Good morning, it's August 20th. The time is 8 a.m. and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports the president of the Western Colorado Latino Chamber of Commerce has decided to step down in order to focus on his fight against cancer. Retired businessman Rich Lopez founded the chamber in February after moving to Grand Junction in 2011. His 40-year career included a printing business that he owned and operated in Denver and Greeley before retiring. Chamber Vice President Abel Chavez will replace Lopez as interim president. Treasurer Luis Goodman described Lopez as the visionary of the chamber, but said the seven-month-old organization will continue with business as usual in his absence. According to the Sentinel, Lopez wanted to help non-Latino business owners break into the Latino market while stressing the importance of the area's Latino community. The chamber has added 35 members since its creation and, according to Chavez, continues to grow. The Mesa County District Attorney's Office has ruled that a Palisade mother accused of criminally negligent homicide will receive a fair trial, despite defense attorneys' claims that the case has been tainted by media attention. According to the Sentinel, attorneys for Heather Jansen claim the excessive media attention has created what they call actual prejudice against Jansen for a potential jury. Jansen's charges also include child abuse resulting in death and false reporting of the death of her two sons, ages 2 and 4. Attorneys last week filed a motion to move the trial, which is set to begin on October 28th, to a different venue. Jansen's public defender said the media attention generated by the case has been, quote, massive, pervasive, and prejudicial. Prosecutors say high-profile cases have gone before juries in the county and claim the media attention won't affect the court proceedings. Jensen has pleaded not guilty to the charges brought against her. An arrest warrant affidavit claims her two sons died from overheating after they were left alone in Jansen's car in November of last year. And the Denver Post reports that prosecutors in the Aurora Theater shooting case are trying to block testimony about the history of the death penalty in Colorado and the state's method of execution. In a motion revealed to the public yesterday, prosecutors outlined specific aspects of the death penalty that they say jurors shouldn't be allowed to hear, such as where it's been used or not, or the living conditions of prisoners sentenced to life. They also argue that family members of James Holmes shouldn't be allowed to testify on how a death penalty sentence would affect them. According to the Post, both sides of the case have been filing motions ahead of the August 30th deadline for arguments on the issue of capital punishment. Holmes' attorneys last week filed a motion claiming the broad language of the state's death penalty system makes it unconstitutional. Holmes, currently undergoing a psychiatric evaluation, has pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity to charges that he killed 12 people and tried to kill dozens more at an Aurora movie theater last year. This is the last week for Coloradans to weigh in on new state rules to regulate retail stores selling recreational marijuana. Public hearings begin today in Denver. As Benta Berkland reports, state officials expect to have the rules in place by fall.
The governor's task force and state lawmakers worked last session to craft new rules. Some of the goals include keeping marijuana out of the hands of youth, safe packaging, and trying to keep the product off the black market. Julie Postlewaite is a spokeswoman for the state's Marijuana Enforcement Division.
We'll definitely be talking about packaging, advertisement, the different license classes. It'll touch on the testing facilities, transportation, labeling, signage.
Postlewaite says there's not a lot of wiggle room in terms of changing any of the rules, but she says the public's comments will still be taken under consideration. The hearings wrap up on Thursday. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And according to the North Fork Merchant Herald, after weeks of preparation, the town of Hotchkiss last week passed a ban on all commercial marijuana activity in town limits. The ban extends to any retail stores, grow facilities, product manufacturing facilities, and testing facilities. After shredding some 120,000 stockpiled tires in March, Delta County's Adobe Butts landfill has already accumulated 8,800 tires, weighing more than 125 tons. And that's a good thing, as the manager of the facility reported to the Delta County Commissioners on Monday. KVNF's Marty Derlin has the story.
Delta County's acceptance and use of tires at the Adobe Buttes landfill seems to be an unqualified success so far. After years of accepting the tires for free, the facility now charges $2 per tire or $140 per ton. It hasn't seemed to halt the flow of tires, But now the county is the end user of the shredded byproduct, giving landfill manager Kevin Hunt a steady supply of cover to keep trash from blowing.
It's great. They're coming in. No hassles about the $2 a tire or 140 ton. We're still getting them, which is good.
Commissioner Doug Atchley had a question, though.
How many can we store out there?
Well, since I put us in for the number where we can use them as a to shred them and to use them as an end user and a and facility to take them in, it says 75% of our 3-year average. Every 3 years, you got to shred 75% of your 3-year average. So I'm just assuming my first year started this year.
In the meantime, the landfill has provided a special place for the tires.
They were stacked up on top of the cell, and that was one of the things that the state was looking at, that you don't want to really do that. In case you catch fire, you know, you got 30 or 40 feet of garbage underneath of you. So we built a place down off the side, which is going to normally be cell 7 here in 20 years. We flattened a spot out down there, and it makes it even easier for people to go down there because it's the end of the asphalt road.
Commissioner Bruce Hovde had another concern.
Do you do any mosquito control on those tires?
No, because the mosquitoes won't live in it because of the heat of the day. The black tires heats the water up. I don't think that mosquitoes would survive in that hot of a water. I haven't seen any mosquitoes.
Increasingly, there are other applications for shredded tires as lightweight fill, drainage material, and thermal insulation. The commissioners had overall praise for Hunt's operation at Adobe Buttes, which Hovde called the Taj Mahal of landfills. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
At yesterday's council meeting, county commissioners also passed a resolution to place the elimination of term limits on 4 county positions on the November 5th ballot. If approved, the measures will allow the clerk and recorder, the treasurer, the surveyor, and the assessor to serve without limitation. All 4 are elected positions. Last week, the Almanac saw a lot of talk about mushrooms. Steve Smith said they seem to be popping up in larger numbers than usual. Marilyn Stone wondered what factors affect mushroom numbers, and Amber Kleinman asked whether it's possible to grow puffballs in a yard. The field of mycology, or the biological study of mushrooms, is perhaps made up of just as many enthusiastic hobbyists as so-called experts. A large amount of mushroom wisdom tends to be passed from friend to friend, very much in the spirit of the almanac. With that in mind, I decided to sit down for a casual chat with one local mushroom guru, Ryan Warwick. Let me start by asking you, is it really a good year for mushrooms?
It's better than last year by far, because last year it didn't rain much. We only had a few mushrooms. Being an amateur mycologist, I was quite under-fungused, if you will.
Let's talk about where mushrooms grow, because one of the observations that we had, or one of the questions, rather, that we had on the almanac was, I've been seeing a lot of puffballs. Are these the type of mushrooms that I can grow in my backyard? What different kinds of wild mushrooms can you cultivate at home? Or is it worth doing that? Can you do that with the type of wild mushrooms we have around here?
Well, there's a variety of mushrooms you can cultivate at home. Oysters particularly will grow on most things. Coffee, most kinds of hard and or soft woods, phone books, newspapers, dirty motor oil. They will grow almost anywhere if inoculated right, and as long as they're not competing with some other bacteria or fungus that happens to be stronger than them. Most fungus has to build up immunities in their environment, even though it may be the same mushroom that grows in this environment. If you order it online, you get these sterile spores, and then they have to fight to build up an immunity, so you're likely to fail if you don't have a very clean place to grow them. In general, you can't grow boletes or chanterelles. I don't know. There's a variety that you can't grow, but those are the main two that I know that nobody's really figured out how to cultivate successfully.
So there's a few type of mushrooms that you can grow in your backyard, but is it hard? I mean, is it worth trying to manufacture that right sort of environment?
Depends on the mushroom and the environment, but I know a friend here who's grown shiitakes. He got these inoculated logs from probably somewhere in the Northwest. They sat for 4 years in his yard before they produced a mushroom. And he watered them and kept them in the shade and tried and tried and tried. And finally he's like, oh, I got a mushroom. Woo! And years later. Mm-hmm. And they produced a few more mushrooms over a period of a couple of years. And they're still in the same backyard.
You know, there have been some reports on the Almanac of people seeing more mushrooms they've seen this year than they have in the past few years. But at the same time, I mean, we're in the middle of a pretty heavy drought here. We've got some good monsoon rains so far this season, but we're still in a drought. So I don't know. I mean, do you have any perspective on that? Are we seeing more mushrooms, or should we expect to see less mushrooms in a drought year? Or does drought really have a direct effect on mushroom populations?
Drought definitely has a direct effect. Without moisture, mushrooms just won't grow. They're similar to mammalian flesh in the sense that they absorb vitamin D and they need water. I think this year is probably an average mushroom year as far as harvesting goes. Last year was terrible. The drought was worse. We didn't have a good monsoon season. Due to the lack of snowpack, we didn't have much early fungus. Yeah, I don't think it's more than usual, or definitely not in years.
So do you know whether the type of rain has an effect on mushroom populations? You know, because, I mean, we have monsoon rains that sort of come in, drop a lot of water, go out. Do those help mushrooms proliferate more than, say, like a long, steady rain would?
I would say a long, steady rain helps proliferate them more than these quick rains that we have. But thunderstorms supposedly are good for fungus. I don't know how the static electricity of lightning affects that, but I don't even know if it's true. Mm. It's just something I've read and heard from numerous people. I don't know if I said before that I'm an amateur mycologist. A lot of people call me like the mushroom guru or the expert around here, but that's totally not true. I'm an advanced amateur, if anything.
Over the weekend, KVNF participated in the first annual 24-hour radio race presented by KCRW in Southern California. On Saturday morning, Allie Lightfoot, Joanna Calabrese, and myself were given 34 hours to imagine, capture, write, and produce an original documentary based on a theme. Our assigned theme was The Last Thing You'd Expect. After spending the day talking to a diverse sampling of North Fork Valley residents, we decided to let them tell the story of a common yet contentious everyday sight here in the valley. How often do you see it?
We look at it basically every day. You know, it's the first thing you look at when you get up.
I see it every day, every third day.
I'd say at least twice a week.
I see it from the coffee shop window, from my kitchen window.
Just look up and see it while you're doing your chores and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. It's always up there, you know, it never moves. I mean, I didn't even really notice it at first, but I saw it yesterday and yeah, it's kind of intimidating. It's just up there, you know, just hanging out, like it's watching. But I don't know, I mean, I've only been in town like, what, 3 weeks, maybe four? Probably shouldn't even be talking about it. I mean, I still don't even know what it is.
We always was taught that it was a lamb.
It's a big cartoon llama. It looks fake and put on there.
Kind of like a short-legged lamb, like a, maybe that's a goat, kind of an angora. I guess that's a goat, isn't it?
For the Utes, it was the white buffalo. It's very vibrant, it's very alive, and it's very real.
Yeah, it's big, yeah. I've actually slept up on the base of the feet once.
It looks to me like a lamb. At first I didn't think so, but gradually I began to see it very clearly.
Erosion and weathering are so rapid that thing is beginning to look like a kind of a sorry-looking buffalo.
It is big and bold. Once you notice it's there, then you notice it always.
So how did it even get there?
Something cataclysmic.
Great giants were thrusting at each other, and you can see the claw marks.
It got there just the way we all got here, which is through evolution and change.
You know, how the weather changes and everything, the winter and all this, that, and the other. I mean, you know, gotten a little fatter, I think, in these last few years.
I believe that it was aliens trying to understand more about what makes hippies tick.
Supposedly there's some sort of curse.
There was a massacre that took place. The blood is still running through the land.
I think the Buddhas built it. Probably it was a long time ago.
When the lamb turns into a buffalo, the curse will go away.
What did the science guys say about it?
Weathering itself can be defined as those forces that break rock into fragments but don't carry them away. Erosion, then, can be defined as those forces that not only break up the rock into fragments but also carry it away under the influence of wind and water and ice and so forth and so on. Movement of animals, little animals, in time, they have an effect as well.
Yeah, that sounds right. But still, it's just like a roll of the dice. Everyone's got their own side or story or vision of it. Like they're all drawing on the same page, but just layering over each other, so you can't even tell who started the picture. It's just wild. I mean, everyone in this town sees that scar on the mountain every day. It's always there. It never changes, but you listen to people talk about it and you'd think they're describing the history of the world or the birth of God or something. Why do you think they care about it so much?
It's always been there. You hear everybody talk about it. All the old-timers that grew up around here, they use it as a landmarking to give direction. And to me, it's home. It shows home.
It's almost a living, viable thing.
It's a beautiful imperfection. It's like a scar on the mountain that gives it its character.
It's so bright because it's fresh. It'll be probably within a century or two, it'll be oxidized and dark again. So it just happens to be really bright right now.
I hope it doesn't slide away in my lifetime and just come one big blob of something.
On a full moon, it will reflect moonlight and be highly visible.
It's just a part of how nature works, the processes that produce the landscape features that we see. And wherever I go, I find that interesting. And this lamb up here is one of particular interest to me.
There's a significance there for me, personal significance, about the spirit of the land.
I've been living with it for some 35 years. And I see it every day. And I think I would be lonely without it.
KCRW will announce the winners of the 24-hour radio race next Monday. But in the meantime, you can help KVNF win the audience favorite award by liking the piece you just heard on SoundCloud. Just visit kvnf.org for instructions. Thanks for tuning in this morning for KVNF News. I'm Travis Bubenik.